Some thoughts now about the Jimmy Carter years, the many years he's been a Nobel Prize-winning humanitarian activist, and the years when he was president, between 1977 and 1981.
A few moments ago, on Air Force One, before we landed Warner Robins, I had received word officially for the first time that the aircraft carrying the 52 American hostages had cleared Iranian airspace on the first leg of a journey home, and that every one of the 52 hostages was alive, was well, and free.
This was perhaps the low point of President Jimmy Carter's power, the day the American hostages in Iran were released, also the day President Carter's successor, Ronald Reagan, was inaugurated. A moment when Carter's legacy was a real question mark, having been swept away by the electoral mandate for the GOP and an Iranian government led by Ayatollah Khomeini determined to take down a U.S. president. Today, more than 30 years later, Carter's influence is quiet. His steadfast work on world peace and improving the lives of people in the developing world through the work of the Carter Center has become its own tide of tangible success.
John, there's one place on earth where we analyze every human illness constantly to see which ones can be theoretically eliminated or eradicated. And it's International Task Force on Disease Eradication, located at the Carter Center.
That's President Carter telling me personally and an audience at the American Museum of Natural History this week of the Carter Center's success in leading the global effort to eradicate diseases like malaria and guinea worm.
In addition to malaria, we deal with five diseases that the World Health Organization classifies as neglected tropical diseases. Guinea worm is one of them, dracoon colitis. We also deal with trachoma and onchocerciasis, which is rubber blindness, and schistosomiasis and lymphatic filariasis, which is elephantiasis. But tonight we're talking about guinea worm, and we started this in the 1980s because that was the decade of water. It was ordained by the United Nations. And my former drug czar, Dr. Peter Bourne, was the director of that program, and he came to the Carter Center and described some diseases that were horrible and afflicted hundreds of millions of people, but were derived from the drinking of impure water. And we adopted guinea worm as one of our projects back in 1986. And so we undertook this. The disease only takes place in isolated villages, mainly in arid areas, where people don't have a running stream or a well or anything else to get water from. It was in three countries in Asia and 17 countries across sub-Saharan Africa. 23,600 villages. We've been to all the villages now. And we had 3.5 million cases of guinea worm to begin with that we found. And we now have 126 cases left.
And the president says he knows each one of those remaining 126 guinea worm victims and what village they came from. President Carter is actually on the verge of declaring for only the second time in world history that a disease has been eradicated. Smallpox was the first. This is an indelible legacy for a man who celebrated his 90th birthday last fall and his Carter Center, whose motto is wage peace, fight disease, build hope. He couldn't free the more than 60 American hostages in Iran back in 1981, but he has freed millions of hostages to guinea worm.
One of our worst, most difficult problems to overcome when we began with guinea worm in the middle 80s was the lack of communication, lack of understanding, because the people that have guinea worm live in the most isolated and poverty-stricken villages in the world. And they were totally illiterate. They didn't have any knowledge of, much less access to, radio or television. So how do you teach them about a strange approach to a disease? Quite often they didn't speak either French or English. And sometimes we had to have three interpreters from their local language to a middle language and then to French and then to English. So the only way we could educate them about the disease was by drawing cartoons. And we would draw two cartoons, one with a woman getting water and then one of the women spilted her water. And then this one over here filtered the water. She didn't have guinea worm. This woman had guinea worm coming out of her body. That was the only way we could teach them. And now you could probably not find a village in Africa that doesn't have at least two or three cell phones in the village. And some places, almost everybody there has a cell phone. So that itself makes it much more easy to transmit information and to receive information from those people.
Carter says that modern warfare is the enemy of modern technology in fighting disease. Here, President Carter explains how needing to fight disease was on the table when he personally negotiated a six-month truce a decade ago in the Sudanese Civil War.
Well, we had analyzed or quantified the number of guinea worm cases all over the world, and we found that South Sudan had a lot of them, and we couldn't get in there to treat the people or even to analyze village and village. So I went over there and spent a good many weeks negotiating with the leader of South Sudan military forces, John Garang, and President Bashir, who's still there, in northern Sudan.
Who's a wanted war criminal.
That's right, in Khartoum. And both of them wanted to get rid of guinea worm, but they couldn't do it because the war was going on, and they knew we couldn't get in. So the north, who had tanks and trucks and so forth, they wanted the dry season is when to fight, because then they could travel all over South Sudan. The South Sudanese wanted the wet season because they could use the rivers and so forth. And so I couldn't get them to agree on the time. And finally, in 1995, they did agree to have a ceasefire. And if you go there now and say, how about the ceasefire in 1995? And they'll say, oh, the guinea worm ceasefire. Everybody knows it was just for guinea worm. So we have zero cases in Sudan, and we have just a very few cases in South Sudan because of that ceasefire.
In his travels around the world, President Jimmy Carter has seen firsthand the heavy footprint of the industrial world on places it says it is trying to help. For instance, even though the West can claim enormous resources devoted to helping the developing world in economic aid, humanitarian aid, and military aid, the West is also part of the problem. For instance, when prosperity in the West means the most talented people leave home for greener pastures.
Well, one of the worst things that we've addressed is the depletion of whatever registered nurses and doctors exist in those countries. They get trained in their own medical schools, and they can get a lot more money if they come to the United States and practice their profession. My mother was a registered nurse. And when we got through with the wars in Liberia, they have about 4 or 5 million people who live there. They had terrible post-traumatic stress syndrome and other results of the wars, and only one psychiatrist in the whole country. So my wife is in charge of mental health kind of at the Carter Center. She has trained 144 psychiatric nurses who now deal with the problems there.
There's probably 200 psychiatric nurses within a half block of here where we are.
Probably, yeah, that's true. And even the Gates Foundation and others will employ a registered nurse from, say, Ghana or Liberia or Sierra Leone and get them to move to the United States. And we're trying to stop that through the United Nations effort.
Today, the Jimmy Carter legacy seems secure, the most successful post-president, perhaps, in American history. So a person in the audience wanted to ask the question, can Jimmy Carter see a world someday free of all disease?
The answer is no.
Our thanks to President Jimmy Carter and to the American Museum of Natural History, which recorded and provided the audio from the event on the exhibit at the museum called Countdown to Zero, Efforts Around the World to Eradicate Disease.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.